We're in the midst of this I Am series, and if I were to dig into the core of, like, why would we even do this series, is because I don't know if there is a more noble, more important, even better pursuit in this lifetime than the pursuit of God, the pursuit of Jesus. Who is he? It's not going to be a waste of your time if you spend most of your time. Let me say that again. It would not be a waste of your time if you spent most of your time in this lifetime understanding who Jesus is, hearing from him, connecting with him. What better way to do that than to look at the statements that John wrote in his gospel where Jesus himself said, "This is who I am." First and foremost, he's equating himself directly with the great I Am of Moses in the burning bush when the God of the universe said, "I am." When Jesus says, "I am," he's making a very, very bold, but very, very true statement that he is God. But then he goes on to say that I am the bread of life. I am the one who sustains. I am the light of the world. I am the one who lets you understand what real reality is. He says, "I am the gate. I am the access point for life itself." I am these things, he says. I am the good shepherd, the one who makes you safe in the midst of an unsafe world. And today we're going to talk about the deepest claim yet, where he says, "I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life." This message clearly and obviously starts on Route 30 in Irwin, Pennsylvania. I'm pretty sure Route 30 runs pretty much from the East Coast to the West Coast. But if you live in Irwin, Pennsylvania, and any number of other cities across the country, you're going to have Route 30 going right through your town. And it was the main drag in our town. Everything you wanted to do around Irwin, whether it was go to church or go to school or go to the restaurant or go to the club or go to play tennis or whatever, you got on Route 30 and you made your way there. Back in the day, in the 70s and 80s, and I don't know if it's still this way today, I don't think so, it was a four-lane highway. I don't know if you call it a highway because it gets slowed down in the city there, in the town. A lot like Sawmill, with 20 less lights. It had maybe two or three lights. So you could get yourself going. Two lanes going this way, two lanes. That's a four lane, right? Two and two. Two lanes going. So here was the problem, though. Everybody was on Route 30, and everybody was trying to get onto Route 30 or off of Route 30, and there weren't that many lights. So the turning lane was the passing lane. You sat in the passing lane to turn left off of Route 30. If you just went down and for whatever reason stood along Route 30 at some point in the 70s or 80s, just for like an hour and paid attention, you would hear poof, someone getting rear-ended on Route 30. Happened all the time. My neighbor, Dante Bertani, asked Diane Smedanski out after he rear-ended. They dated for a year. Everybody's been rear-ended on Route 30. I was home from college in summer. I was driving my coveted 1976 Royal Blue Ragtop MGB. Yeah, I love that car. Went through a lot in that car. I was sitting in that car waiting to turn left on Route 30. If you had any experience driving on Route 30 back in the day, you watched your rearview mirror more than you watched the oncoming traffic you were going to turn in front of. And I'm looking in my mirror, and I see someone coming, which you always do. It's a question of when will they see me. This happened to be a quarry dump truck. Big old quarry dump truck. I'm watching this one with a lot of intention. Does he see me? How fast is he going? It's kind of hard to judge in the rearview mirror. And this is what I see in my rearview mirror. He jumps in his seat, grabs his wheel, and I realize I'm in trouble. So I just floor it. I just move forward as fast as I can. And to this day, all I can remember seeing in my rearview mirror is a quarry dump truck. He must have come within an inch of hitting me, but he did not. Thank goodness, because that would not have been a rear end. That would have been a over the top. I'm pretty sure that dump truck would have just rode right over me and squashed me like a bug. I could tell you three or four other near-death experiences along Route 30. And any number of other ones in my life, and maybe you can too. Maybe way more serious than that one ended up being. I don't know. But here's the deal. If you follow Jesus, you will have at least one near-death experience. I promise you, I'm gonna tell you what that means. But let's back up a little bit. Near-death situations are riddled and peppered throughout the Bible. Near-death experiences. You can think of, I'll give you three right off the top of my head. Isaac, right? He's on the altar, the knife is raised, it's coming down, God intervenes, he's spared, near death. Joseph, thrown in the pit, right, by his brothers, left to die, eventually pulled into slavery, and ultimately goes on to be the savior of his family and his nation. Near-death experience. Jonah, right, runs from God, gets swallowed by the great fish, prays inside the fish in the depths of the sea, and then is delivered, which is the nicest way to put it, the way you come out of a whale. He is delivered after 3 days from his near-death experience. These moments all through the Bible where the story seems like it's finished, it's wrapped up, but God brings life out of it. All of these recountings really are God hinting at something that might maybe most clearly expressed in the book of Job, possibly the oldest writings we have in the canon, where Job says this fairly well-known phrase, I know, do you know it? I know that my Redeemer lives. Job speaks these words in the most significant of life despair seasons. His children are all dead. His wealth is gone. His body is covered with disease. His friends insist, really, that he must be wrong. And he believes that God has turned his back on him. And it's in that despair that he says, I know that my Redeemer lives, but listen to what he says. This is Old Testament stuff here. And then in the end, he will stand on the earth. And after my skin has been destroyed, yet in my flesh, I will see God. Are you catching this? I know that my Redeemer lives and that in the end, he will stand on the earth. After my skin has been destroyed, but in my flesh, I will see God. Job is believing that even if this suffering kills him and then his body starts to decay and does decay, somehow God will ultimately vindicate him and personally see him. That's a pretty unbelievable attitude given where he is. Pretty unbelievable belief, really. It's really a defiant hope in the middle of devastation. And Scripture repeats this sentiment. Death will not have the final word. Death will not have the final word. Even your death will be a near-death experience. When you hear Job's words, my Redeemer lives, do you feel the pull of that in your soul? Do you find yourself being reminded of the deep belief that you have, or do you find yourself being pulled toward wanting to believe that? Does it sound like where you live? Does it sound like where you wished you lived? Do you believe this? Do you know your rescuer, your advocate, your vindicator, your defender, your hero lives? Do you know that? So here we are. The I am statement of the week. The well-known near-death experience of Lazarus. Let me try to summarize this real quickly for you. Jesus receives word that his close friend Lazarus is sick. His sisters send message to Jesus, Lord, The one you love is sick. Now, this statement is full of faith, right? Trust. Lord, the one you love is sick. What are they saying? What's being said? Come, we've seen you heal. He's very sick. Come, heal him. They believe. But instead of rushing there, Jesus waits. 2 days later, he shocks his disciples and says, Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I'm glad I was not there so that you may believe. Feels almost heartless. I'm glad for your sake so that you might believe. Which at the moment, they're like, we're starting to not believe, actually. By the time Jesus arrives, it's been 4 days, which in that time, in that era, is legally dead. They were often worried that they had misdiagnosed death. Someone was just super, super sick. People had been buried a lot. So 4 days, you're dead. You're totally, so totally dead, officially and legally, beyond any hope of revival. His sister Martha meets him, and rather instructively for us, right? Listen, she's got both faith and disappointment, both. It is our reality, folks. It is our reality, both faith and hope. She says, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. I know you could have done this, but I'm also deeply saddened by the situation that you've waited. I trust you, but I'm disappointed. Have you been there? Yeah, me too. Jesus responds with one of the most direct declarations he ever makes about himself. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. Martha's familiar with the language and responds with really sort of a limited but common understanding of resurrection. She says, yeah, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Yeah, I get that. Finally, Jesus reaches the tomb. He finds Mary there, mourning with others. A lot of grief. And we come across the shortest verse in Scripture, John 11:35. If you want to start your memory Bible verse reading, it's where we start. Lots of early success. Jesus wept. Jesus, maybe more directly translated, teared up. Then Jesus walks to the tomb, orders the stone removed. Martha warns him the body's already begun to decay. I don't know if you're watching Survivor 50 this year. We watch it almost as a sentimental thing. We started watching Survivor the same year we planted this church with our kids. We still talk about Survivor because it's just ingrained in us. This is year 50. All kinds of famous survivors are back for it. This one guy in particular had what we'll call is a major and embarrassing gastrointestinal accident. And he's walking off to take care of it, and the cameraman's following him. And you don't address cameras when you're in a reality show, but he did. He turned and said, you do not want to follow me right now. You do not want to get this on camera. Trust me. And Mary's saying, you do not want to open that tomb right now, Jesus. You seriously do not want to do that. Isn't it shocking what we assume Jesus does not know? You think Jesus doesn't know what's going on in there, one way or the other? How often are we like that? Hey, Jesus, I want to just chip you in on something here. Maybe you don't know this about my life. Jesus answers, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? Then he shouts into the darkness of the grave, Lazarus, come out. And we know the end of the story. The man walks out of the tomb. And everyone sees the glory of God. The eminence, the ultimate expression of God's superiority over all things, along with his compassionate heart, we see the fullness of God condensed into this one monumental moment of time. If he had come sooner, yes, Lazarus may have been healed, but because Jesus waited, death had to answer to Jesus. And Jesus wins easily and demonstrates the glory of God. Okay, a few things, right? We need to dig in this a little bit. What is resurrection? Do you know what resurrection is? Basically a resuscitation, a being brought from death back to life. That's the basic, what is resurrection? What people expected in Jesus' day, Martha hinted at for us. At the end of history, God would raise the dead. That's what most of them believed. So that's what she says. I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Yes, Jesus, I know that there is this resurrection. It was expected, but it was future. Jesus' claim, utterly different. Standing outside the tomb, Jesus says this. Again, I'm going to read you. I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing me will never die. Jesus is saying, resurrection is not a future event. He is standing right here. Which isn't easy to get your head around. What's he saying? I am the resurrection. Is he saying, is this his way of saying, I'm going to be resurrected? Is he saying there is no end times resurrection, that all those mentions are simply referring to him? We know it's actually neither of those, because if we put this in context, it's a little simpler to figure out. We're in John 11. If you go back to John 1, and then look at what Paul's teaching in Ephesians 1, you get even a clearer idea about what's going on in here. Here's John 1. Remember this? We did this in a series not too long ago. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life. What Jesus is saying in the now has always been true. It's not something new. Life has always been in him from the very beginning. Ephesians 1, this is Paul. I pray that the eyes of your heart, you, the believer, may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which Christ has called you. The riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people. And he goes on to say, his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead. Or when Christ raised Lazarus from the dead. What they understand to be a future action, Jesus is saying, is a present person. Life has always been in me and through me from the beginning in time, and it will be true at the end of time. Life will come from me and always has. He's clarifying two things. I am the resurrection and the life. He is two sorts of life power. Jesus is life power. Life power over death. Life power over death. Jesus might say something like this: you humans are ingenious, you're creative, you are resilient, but you can do nothing about death. But it's a snap for me. So easy for me to overcome. I am a life power that death cannot invade. It cannot win. It's easy. It's like, and Jesus uses this metaphor, light and dark. A little bit of light, the darkness is gone. No matter how much darkness is there, it cannot affect the light. the way it wishes it could. Same with death when it comes to Jesus. Life power, secondly, for living. Jesus might say this, you don't need to wait for the end of your life for this power. My death-defying life power is available now. So this is essentially what those in his presence were trying to get their head around, what they had to deal with. The one through whom life emerged in the beginning and the one who will restore life in the end is standing right here, right now. Wowee. The one through whom life emerged in the beginning and the one who will restore life in the end is standing right here, right now. Don't open that tomb, Jesus. I am the resurrection and the life. So the big question that should be coming to everyone's mind when he says that, Jesus asks right away. I obscured it from you earlier. Let me read the whole of John 11, 25 and 26. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Do you believe what I've just told you about myself? Do you believe what I just told you about me? Do you believe I myself am life power for now and forever? That it is me here now that will be there then to give life in the resurrection. That it is me through which true life comes to you now. Do you believe this? So let me ask you this creative question. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Do you know that your Redeemer lives? Do you? Do you know that your Redeemer lives? That your rescuer, your advocate, your hero lives now? And that you can live in sync with life power himself? Do you know? The question Jesus is asking isn't, do you believe resurrection is a doctrine? He's asking, do you believe that I am the resurrection and the life? If the answer is yes, then several things shift or should shift now, not just later. If you understand, Jesus says, who I am, and trust yourself, align yourself, your thoughts, your hopes, your decisions, your actions to me, you will live now and right on through your death. What shifts? What changes? Lots of stuff. I've got five I can toss your way here. Hope changes. You stop living as though everything meaningful must be resolved in your lifetime. Let that sink in for a minute. You stop living as though everything meaningful must be resolved in your lifetime. We know that it won't, but we hope that it does. But it may not. You begin to trust that Jesus is at work even when the story feels unfinished, delayed, or unjust. What's been going on with you in hope lately? Well, you've been hoping for. Maybe more to the point, what have you been afraid to hope for? It's okay to hope for things that actually will not happen in this lifetime. The odds of something happening are no reason for you to hope or not hope. We hope. We put our trust in him. Second, waiting changes. We sing that song that trying to remember, I'm worse at remembering song phrases and things. What's the one you guys sang? I sought the Lord, and he heard, and he answered. I sought the Lord. And some of us are thinking, I sought the Lord. And that's where it is right now. And he didn't answer. And we're tempted to not trust. I sought the Lord and he answered, and that's why I trust him. When did he answer? Has he answered yet? In some cases, yes. And those bring us great faith. We try to remember those. I sought the Lord and he answered and I trust him. I sought the Lord now and he's waiting and I'm still trusting him. Waiting changes. It's no longer useless dead space. Waiting is a meaningful space in which Jesus is forming us. Who grows through quick response? Nobody. How much? Not much. We grow through the waiting. It's meaningful. One of the great travesties of our distraction-oriented world is everybody's uncomfortable with boredom. Boredom was the main thing I learned how to do when I was a kid growing up. Waiting on God feels like boredom to us, and so we fill it. In the waiting, he's revealing himself. He's inviting relationship when we're disappointed and confused. What have you been waiting for? What will you continue to wait for? What waiting do you continue to bail out of? Third, your paradigm changes. You stop assuming you already know what life means, what meaning is, what fruitfulness looks like. Let me say that again. You stop assuming you know what good is, that you know what life is, that you know what meaning looks like, what fruitfulness looks like. We don't know very well, but we can know a little bit more, but we can't get there on our own. The world tells us a whole bunch of wrong things about what is good and what is meaningful. Jesus wants to tell you what those things are and often comes through the waiting. Our paradigm changes. Allow Jesus to recalibrate what you understand to be right and good. Allow Jesus in the waiting to reshape your understanding of what a good life actually is. How do you need your paradigm of what brings you life to change? Maybe I should say, how do you need your paradigm of what you think brings you life needs to change? Where do you need that paradigm to be shattered? And fourth, your practices will change if you believe he is life power. You begin to let go of things you pretend are life-giving, and you make room for what Jesus says is life-giving. Maybe today, this is the way my wife put it when I asked her, like, what should I ask her here? She says, ask them if today is their let go of something today, day. Yeah. Is today your let go of something that I think brings me life but doesn't day? And grab onto some things that he says are life-giving. Finally, your posture changes. Instead of despair, apathy, or frantic self-definition, boy, that's going on like crazy in today's world. Frantic self-definition. Belief produces hope, patience, trust, a settled sense that your life matters, your place in the story matters, that Jesus is at work even when you cannot see the end. Our posture changes. How will you let resurrection-based hope, life power based hope, Jesus based hope, meet you today? I wanted to just swing back quickly to this waiting part. Isn't this the hardest part of the whole story? Waiting. He knows he's sick and he waits. And we ask this question every day, don't we? Why doesn't God act sooner? We ask a lot of tough questions in the agonizing moments. And I'm sure you're there right now in some way. Will this turn out okay? Why isn't God acting quicker? Why didn't he act sooner? Does he care? Is he actually powerful? Why does pain exist? Does God really love me? These are the questions that come to mind in the waiting. A lot of skepticism, a lot of doubt. But Jesus asking different questions. Are you willing to trust me in the waiting? Are you willing to believe that I am good all the time and all the time I am good? Are you willing to trust that your life is in my hands, nobody else's? Are you willing to trust that in the end, it'll all make sense? Are you willing to trust that in the end, it will all make sense? Are you willing to trust that you cannot find your greatest peace and your greatest joy in this life apart from me? These are Jesus' questions for us. These are the ones that we ponder in the waiting. In this life, I don't have to tell you this. This isn't news. Trouble still happens. Grief still happens. Death still happens. In those moments, the question we have to ask ourselves is, do I believe? Do I believe my Redeemer lives? Do I believe my Advocate lives? Do I believe my Hero lives? He is the one who specializes in near-death experiences. Let me end with this. Music team. They're so messed up right now because I'm ahead of time. They don't know what to do with themselves. If Jesus is the resurrection, then the worst thing that can happen to you is not the last thing that will happen to you. Jesus is the resurrection and the life. And the worst thing that is happening to you or will happen to you is not the last thing that will happen to you. Do you believe this?